All right, everybody, I am here with Matthew Riddle, former UFC fighter, current Monster Factory student. We were going to put this podcast off for a while. I planned on bringing Matt in just to talk about his training at the Monster Factory, but in light of what happened with John Jones failing a cocaine test and not being stripped of his title and not having to get fired or anything like that, and Matthew Riddle, you know what, we'll put that off for later, but right now we're just going to talk about Matthew Riddle and how he came to the Monster Factory and trained at the Monster Factory. So I'll take you back. A couple months ago, I got the call from your buddy Nick.
Yep.
He calls me up and leaves a message saying, hey, I'm a lawyer for such and such, and I'm calling in reference to a former UFC fighter who is looking to get into the world of professional wrestling. Could you call me back? I think I called him back within 5 minutes and told him, basically, he said, I don't want to fast track Matt. I want him to earn it. And I said, well, I could get him a tryout probably tomorrow. I was like, but I'd like to bring him in so he makes a good first impression. And he says to me, okay, well, I said to him, well, when can you come in? He's like, soon as possible. I was like, all right, how about tomorrow? Can't do tomorrow. I was like, well, how about Saturday? Can't do Saturday. I go, well, how about Monday? Wednesday's probably best. I said, well, then it's not as soon as possible. You should have told me Wednesday, but that's just the dick in me. So you came in, and what was your first impression when you walked in the door?
First impression was, you know, I was stoked, to be honest. It's been my dream to always wrestle professionally, and once I saw the ring, saw the buckles, saw, you know, the group of guys that you're already working with, because you got some talented individuals here and some big individuals, and everything I wanted to see in a professional wrestling gym is what I saw. Saw the weight room, and I knew I had to get on it.
And that's why I wanted to bring you in as soon as possible, because I didn't want you, because as I'm talking to Nick, I'm on Twitter looking you up, and I'm seeing different people you're tweeting and following on Twitter, and I'm like, all right, well, he's talking to some other wrestling schools, and I didn't want you to get drawn into them because I knew that your best fit would be here, judging by your background. Plus, we got Billy Damiano with his amateur background. We got, Luis with, what he's doing and his experience, plus Nick with his amateur background. Plus, it just being in the Paulsboro wrestling room, all that stuff was a big thing where I wanted to get you in. And I saw, like, your eyes light up, and, you know, we even let you get in the ring and roll around a little bit. And then, like, all of a sudden it got out that you were training at Ring of Honor, even though you weren't, that you just – I mean, and we have a great relationship with Ring of Honor, but you just went there for a seminar, because even in an article that they printed about you, it even says in it, like, well, here's Matthew Riddle, his first day of training, they put it in quotes, and they go, well, not really his first day of training, because he was training somewhere else first, but it turned out you were just at the seminar. And, you know, I love the guys over there, Kevin Kelly, Delirious, and all those guys. And how was that at the seminar?
You know, the seminar, honestly, I had a great time. I got in there. They let me fly right into the ring, you know, without any real wrestling experience. I mean, I know how to fight. But I remember I was in the ring with Will Ferrer.
Yeah, yeah.
And just by the way I just posed up against him, he was like, do you know what we're really doing? Because it looks like you're about to kick my ass. And I was like, dude, I've watched a couple wrestling matches. I've had a couple backyard wrestling matches on a trampoline. I know what I'm doing, bro. You know, and of course my tie-up was the shits. I just grabbed him like I normally would in wrestling. And he worked with me, though. Will's a really talented individual. And I had fun, but there was definitely, I knew I was green when I was in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I knew my selling was atrocious. And I knew I had some work ahead of me.
The thing is, like, looking at you now, like, I was just going over tape of watching some of our training, and I could see, like, your progression from, like, when you first came in to now. Like, it's you're coming along really good, and it's and what helps is, like, you're not just someone who went to the UFC and just said, I want to try wrestling. Like, you've always wanted to be a pro wrestler, and UFC pretty much chose you, and then you did it. It's like one of those weird things, like, where usually it's, you just saw it's just the opposite. CM Punk did the pro wrestling, and now he's going to the UFC. You're the exact opposite. The only thing is you got fired, but that's for later on. The thing was, remember we said, I was like, I wanted you to have the right impression. Remember, I always harp on you about what would you say when you first came in that I harped on you? And I'll continue to, because everybody has these certain little things they do, and I always say to them, like Clutch, I always talk about how he started coming off with his grammar to me, like when he first walked in, and I'll always harp on him just so he keeps remembering that. So just so you never make the same mistake, and so people know I'm pretty much a dick to everybody, what did you wind up saying?
When I first came in here, I made the poor decision of saying, hey, you know, I threw people around, you know, for real. I figured I could come in here and give this a shot. And you were like, if you say that anywhere, they'll throw you right out the front door. And that was the last time I said that.
Yeah, and I could understand, like, why you would say that. But, like, you know, like, that's just a huge no-no. Because then it almost, like, you know, I explained it to you. It's almost like saying what we do is just horse shit. And
it's the complete opposite.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, how would you compare the training, like, what your body goes through in the short months that you've been here?
You know, I'll be honest, my body's going through a lot of changes, and not necessarily physical changes, but conditioning changes. Like, when I fought, you know, like certain part of my bodies would condition, like my shins, my knees, my fist, you know. But now, like, my back, you know. Like, when I first came in here, I took some back bumps, took some shoulder tackles. And I remember, like, everybody talks about their first bump and how hard it is. And, you know, I didn't think it was that bad until the next day.
Exactly.
And I was like, wow, like, my shoulders, my back. I mean, even when I did it right, I was still sore. Yeah. And now I'm finally coming to the point where it feels good.
Right.
I can take a bump and I enjoy it.
Now. Right, yeah, because like I tell everybody, like even when we had all those guys trying out the other day, I said, you're all going to wake up and you're going to feel like you were in an accident, and they're all laughing. And some of them denied it, but you'll notice not everybody came back.
Nope.
And everybody was like, yeah, I got the money, I'm going to do this. And then he probably woke up the next day and they're like, maybe this ain't such a good idea. But, yeah, you're coming along well. Like, I was watching you roll around in there with Luis last night. You guys were going over different submissions because he has, like, the judo background and all that stuff. So it was pretty cool to watch that. What would you say is the biggest hurdle that you have to overcome since you've been here?
Well, with fighting, a lot of the times you get to dictate or work around what you're going to do. Well, in professional wrestling, it's not about what you're going to do. It's what you're both going to do. You have to work with another individual or maybe more than one individual. So in professional wrestling, I actually think it's a lot more difficult to work with somebody and make it look brilliant rather than me just whooping somebody's
ass
or just dominating or just getting the win.
Well, that's what I say. I tell everybody, like, they're like, you know, well, football and this. I go, yeah, but how many times do you watch a football game and it's like 3-3 and no one cares and it's boring and it's – but a pro wrestling match, each one has to tell a different story, has to, you know, have that up and down. It, you know, it's like creating a movie and a bunch of movies all together, and then the show itself is one huge movie and all that stuff. And even a program like that, you're working with a guy, and you heard X-Pac out there explain, like, the blow-off. Well, the blow-off is the end of it. So that's the end of the movie, and that was that cage match is usually the blow-off is what they did. And for you guys who are watching or listening right now, they have Sean Waltman's in the other room right now going over matches with everybody and picking them apart. And first he came in and he went over matches and just talked to the students and all. He's great. He says he has like ADD and stuff like that, and they're clapping right now, so he's probably wrapping up. It's been a blast, and it's been really knowledgeable, and he's having fun, and so hopefully we'll get him in there a lot more. I mean, somebody who's done what he's done in his career, it's just a blessing to be able to have him in here. And then this Saturday, you know, I'm going to New York and picking up MVP, and he'll be in Saturday and Sunday to work with the kids and just our kids, you know, just for the Monster Factory. And that's what it's like to train here, is we bring in only the best. And
that's one thing I have to say. My favorite part about training here is you never know who's going to be behind the door. The other day, Jay Lethal's behind the door. This weekend, MVP's behind the door. This Wednesday, you got X-Pac.
And what was really cool is the one time I came in and Rikishi stopped by. You know, Rikishi stopped by. He wanted to see the Monster Factory. Gary Wolf from the Pitbulls, he comes by. D-Lo was here. So it's just, it's always fun.
And that's just such a huge advantage to have as a student, just having a gym, you know.
Yeah.
Just getting that first-hand knowledge from somebody that, there's a lot of people that say, well, this is what you got to do. Well, that's a person that's been on the big show, on every big show. He knows what you have to do, not what I think you have to do.
And one of the other main reasons why I do that is also word of mouth. You know, he can go now and talk to somebody, and, you know, he still talks to people at WWE and I'm sure other places. And now he's saying, hey, I stopped by the Monster Factory and I saw, you know, Matthew Riddle, or I saw Luis Martinez, or I saw this kid Billy Damian, or I saw Nick Camarado. You got to look at this kid. You know, there, you never know what it's going to lead to, and that's what, you know, this is all about. But let's get to, now that we covered your training here and everything, what would you say is the oddest thing about, first let's go to how you were fired. We talked about it before, but no one else has saw the footage or heard the conversation. But let's get to why were you on medical marijuana?
I was on medical marijuana. I've had multiple surgeries. I've had a plate put in my hand. I had a ligament in my thumb reattached. I've had a couple meniscus surgeries, one on each knee. Nothing too crazy, but wear and tear. And I went to a doctor. I refused to take any prescription pills. I won't take any codeine. I just won't do it because I know they're addictive.
Yeah, I'm similar because with my back, I don't take Vicodin. I don't take Percocets or muscle relaxers. It leads to no good.
And I did use marijuana growing up and it worked for me. It was to me, and I'm not encouraging anybody to use it, but for me, it was a miracle drug at the time because it relieved my pain. It wasn't addictive. And I could function, take care of everything, take care of my kids, clean the house, do my work, do my training, and I could do everything.
Yeah, you weren't a zombie.
Exactly. And that's what I was going for, and I went through every legal process. You know, I got an FBI background check. I got a medical license. I still have a medical license from the state of Nevada, and that's how I went about it. And I figured if I went about it this way, you know, what else could I do? It's the best thing I thought I could do at the time.
Now, let's say if you tested positive for prescription Percocet after your fight, would you have been fired?
No. If I had a doctor's note and they knew I was on it, they would approve it and they would allow it. Chris Lieben, I believe one of his last fights, was allowed to fight on codeine or Oxycontin and TRT. Because at the time, before he was fired, and even when I was fired.
Now, just so people who don't know, what is TRT?
TRT is testosterone replacement therapy. It's used for people that have a low testosterone level.
So it's steroids.
It's steroids, and usually the reason why people have to use TRT is your body naturally produces testosterone, but if you abuse testosterone or steroids, your body will stop producing it, and you know, you actually start producing estrogen.
Estrogen, yeah.
So what these gentlemen were doing was taking steroids, and they'd get a doctor's note, and in Las Vegas they would call them wellness centers. And they'd go to these places, and at these places you could obtain testosterone, and you could also obtain HGH.
So, you could take growth hormones, you could take Percocets, Vicodin, Oxycontin, mm-hmm. and test for that during a fight, mm-hmm. and be fine, but you couldn't test for medical marijuana.
Well, this is the big thing, too. It's not even testing for it in your system, medical marijuana. They don't test for marijuana. They test for marijuana metabolites. So even about a month after you're used, you're still going to pop. Even if you're cutting a lot of weight and flushing out.
Yeah, because now it's going to be scraping your liver and all that stuff and kidneys and coming out.
Yes. So, yeah. So, it's just what it was. And I personally didn't agree with it. I don't think anybody really agrees with it.
And this was when you got popped the second time. This was by UFC's people doing the test.
The first drug test I got popped on, Joe Silva called me up the week of a fight it was the first UFC in Calgary, Canada. And he called me up the week of the fight, said, hey, Matt, everybody's falling off like flies. We need you to, could you please step up? I stepped up. I'm a company man. If you ask me to do it, you know, I'm going to do it.
Right.
I did it. I stole the show. I got submission of the night. Probably should have got fight of the night and made about $120,000 in one night.
Nice.
And then Calgary, they called me. They said, you failed for marijuana. I told Calgary, I have a medical marijuana license. They go, oh, we didn't know that. They were very understanding. They go, well, we're not even going to punish you. We're going to suspend you 3 months, but those 3 months are already up. We're not going to fine you any money. And, hey, next time just tell us you have a medical marijuana card. Well, when the UFC caught wind of that, they threw some backlash on the Calgary Athletic Commission, which was brand new at the time. They just got a commission. And they then sent me a letter that I had to sign or they would release me. And the letter basically said, if I ever failed a drug test for marijuana or any drug, really,
right,
they would fire me. And I was like, okay. And I fought in between there. Didn't fail a drug test, passed that test, and
but to interrupt you there, like did you say like, well, this is ridiculous, I have
met. Of course. I was like, are you serious? Like and even when I did interviews and the UFC got very furious with me because I didn't say, oh, these guys are taking steroids, that should be banned. I go, if these guys can use testosterone replacement because their doctor said they should, I think my doctor, who graduated from college, did his work, he's a PhD, he said, I should use medical marijuana, it's in my best interest. I don't see how they can use steroids, but I couldn't use my medicine.
Yeah, you notice though, they don't call it steroid replacement, you know, they don't call it steroid therapy, but because it has marijuana in it, there's that, you know, there's that aura about it, like, oh, it's bad, you know, marijuana is bad. Like, I don't use marijuana, I haven't used it in years, I think I messed around with it, I'm more of a beer drinking guy, this is what I am, but I mean, I don't see why for medical usage, or even, you know, casual use, why it's even banned. But I mean, getting to for them to like all of a sudden like it's the boogeyman because it says marijuana, I mean, that is just very odd. So do you think like all of a sudden, like, because you were bringing up at their press conferences, like, hey, they're using testosterone replacement therapy?
I can assure you that was the reason.
That was also
Michael Mersch, who was their head of the law department, or, you know, their legal department, emailed me multiple times, contacted me multiple times, and said every time I did an interview, do not bring up testosterone. Even if they ask you, tell them to move on.
And this was, you know, not to say who it was, but I mean, this was around the time where there was a lot of older fighters there.
Vanderlei Silva, Chael Sonnen.
Who had been around.
Laundry list of fighters. Right. Even younger fighters that were still in their mid-20s that abused steroids early in their career were now using TRT.
Right. So, I mean, like, this is just, I mean, it just seems to me, you know, not to put words in your mouth or anything like that, but it just seems to me they were, like, trying to shut you up. And it looks like, you know, like, what did you do, go fight in England?
I went, fought in London.
That seems like it was the time where they decided to shut you up.
And the thing about that fight in London is, if anybody knows me, I'm not a big fan of the English, you know. When I went there the first time, they treated me very poorly. A fan spit right in my mouth.
Yeah, I remember that in the press conference.
They were calling me sea sucker and everything else. It was a very poor experience. And I didn't want to go back. Joe Silva promised me a fight with Dan Hardy. And said, if I beat Shay Mills in London, you get your fight with Dan Hardy. So that's the only reason why I agreed to it. Because I knew a win over Hardy would put me in the forefront of the company.
And didn't you beat him? And wasn't the other guy already signed to another fight? Is that?
Yeah, before I even, like, probably 2 weeks after I signed the fight with Shay Mills, it was official. I was probably 8 weeks out before the fight. Joe Silva had Dan Hardy versus Matt Brown. Matt Brown's one of my friends, and Matt Brown would have smashed him. And of course, that fight didn't happen. Dan Hardy pulled out. He had a wolf heart, I guess they call it. I guess an irregular rhythm in his heart. And so that fight didn't happen. I guess I never would have fought him either.
Right.
But at the same time,
it's a slap in your face because now they're just feeding you lines to get you to do what they want.
They're lying to me. And like I said, I'm the kind of guy that would take a fight on less than a week's notice. You know, I'm the kind of guy that's always in shape and ready to go. And for them to do that, I started my pro career with them at 22 years old. I dropped out of school to be in the UFC. And for them to do that was insulting. And then to send me to London, where I didn't want to go because of what happened in the past, was just another slap in the face. So I told them, I'm going to do this. I'm going to ride him like a pony. I'm going to make this the most boring fight on the fight card. I'm going to take him down and smother him. I might TKO him. I might submit him. But I don't care if I finish him. I'm just going to win.
So they were kind of pissed at that because they wanted you to put on a show.
I was the only guy on the main card that night that did not get invited to the press conference. and shockingly, after the UFC ran their drug test, even though I quit 3 weeks out, and I'm not saying 3 weeks out's good or whatever, I guess I shouldn't have been using, period. And I understand that completely. I'm a professional athlete. But at the same time, I had a medical license. I felt like I was in the right, you know, I had the right to use it.
Right.
I paid
and
my
you should have. Yeah.
I had to pay about $500-$600 just to get that license every year.
Right.
So I thought I was more than in the right.
So what? How lead me down the road to you getting the call that you failed?
So I win the fight in London. I take the drug test. You know, I think I'm good. I've been clean for at least a month. And so I fly home. I see my family. I'm hanging out with them. And
now, when you take that drug test, is it like immediately after the fight they call you in a room?
Immediately after the fight. And, of course, the crappy thing is right after a fight, you're so dehydrated going 15 minutes that I was peeing brown.
See, maybe you should have just knocked him out in the very beginning and you'd have passed out.
Yeah, but the thing also being, you know, flying overseas and all that stuff and the stress alone, it's hard to hydrate your body and do everything properly. And, of course, I asked the UFC if I could get an IV because I cut from 195 pounds even when I'm training nonstop like an animal. And, of course, they said, oh, we'll look into it. Of course, that never happened. But I think that might help, too, just being a little more
hydrated. Yeah.
But, you know, when you're peeing and you're just, like, I never would have passed the hydration test for wrestling.
Oh, yeah, no.
And that was that. A week later, they call me up. They go, hey, you failed your second drug test. We're going to exercise our right to let you go. They didn't offer me rehab.
No, I was going to say, they didn't offer you rehab. They didn't say, do you want to make a statement and maybe save your career and say that you have a marijuana problem? They didn't want to do anything like that?
Nope. They said, we're exercising our right to fire you. You know, best of luck. We hope to see you again in the near future. And at this point, I was like, okay, I got fired for having a medical marijuana license, using my medicine. And, of course, I had lawyers out the wazoo hitting me up, you should sue. And, of course, I'm not that kind of guy. Because in my eyes, I wanted to work my way back. Because that's where I started. That's where I wanted to finish.
Right.
Well, within a couple days of me getting released, Dana White went on Fox Sports and put me on blast.
Oh, yeah. He was saying you're a spoiled brat.
I'm a spoiled brat. I made way too much money. I was a loser. You know, he's not that good, even though I was on a 4-fight win streak and my record in the UFC was 9-3. And, you know, when I have no leg to stand on, he's on Fox Sports getting to blast me. The public definitely frowned upon it. I lost a lot of sponsors, lost a lot of money. And that's actually one other thing. I'm probably the only fighter in UFC history to fail 2 drug tests for marijuana, but the UFC never fined me a dime either.
Right. Here's what's very troubling to me. As I read like Dana White's statement on it, which was like basically, you know, hey, John Jones, he's a fighter inside the ring, and he's going to be a fighter outside the ring, and we wish him the best of luck. No concern for you. It was almost like, Matthew Riddle, you spoiled cunt. You know, screw you. Who the F do you think you are? You piece of crap. I hope you die. It was basically, you're lazy. You're not going to amount to nothing. That's no way to help anybody who, in UFC's eyes, I mean, has a problem, you know. But then, like, John Jones does coke,
I didn't know he had a cocaine license.
Yeah, he didn't have a cocaine license, and I don't even think they prescribed it. I think Elvis Presley had a prescribed liquid cocaine back in the day, but he could get anything he wanted. He was God. But, I mean, this is, to look at it from, you know, put it this way, from this point of view, you look at it and you're like, Matt's just bitter. Matt's just bitter. But, I mean, what's right is right, and there shouldn't be two sets of rules. And then they also called it, well, he was out of competition. They said that but he still broke the law.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm concerned about. Another thing, when I failed my drug test, you know, their biggest reason was I was on a performance-enhancing drug, and they were worried about the fighter's safety. And if I was worried about my fighter safety and my light heavyweight champion tested positive for cocaine 3 weeks before a fight, I would pull that fight off the card and make sure he got the treatment and help he needed, which he is now, and I'm thankful that he's getting it because I do believe John Jones is the greatest fighter pound for pound in the world.
Right.
He has proven it time and time again.
Except when you beat him.
Yeah, you know, that was back in the day. There was no elbows, but yes, that did happen on two separate occasions. So,
but now, yeah, I mean, like, what would be how liable would? Could you imagine if John Jones had a heart attack out there?
Yeah, and do you know how much money the UFC would have invested to keep that drug test under wraps?
Yeah,
and probably what they tried to do at this
point,
because how come it wasn't public knowledge?
Yeah,
all those drug tests. I remember when I failed my first drug test, and the one thing I was upset about Calgary doing is you can always assume I failed for marijuana, but the commission legally isn't allowed to just release, and the UFC isn't just legally allowed to release your results to the public,
right,
because it's my personal medical information.
Right.
They released it. Now everybody knows I burn. Now everybody knows it. So now when I do an interview, everybody's like, so how's that weed?
Yeah, you're potted.
And it's like, what am I supposed to do now? Now when people talk to me, they want to talk about that.
Right.
How am I supposed to get away from that? And now they're telling me, I can't talk about TRT. You can't do this. You can't do that. Watch what you say. And, you know, and your medical license doesn't mean anything.
Right.
But I'll tell you this. They never told me to stop smoking. They just told me, you know, piss clean. And I think that's the, you know, that's the problem with the industry. I think that first pop, they should have been like, get off it. We're going to test you regularly, make sure you're off it, and if you fail again, we're going to send you to rehab or you're done.
Right.
And I would have completely understood that. Instead, they told me piss clean for your fights.
So in other words, they had no problem with you using pot, just don't do it when we're going to test you.
Correct.
So it's not that they care about your well-being, they just care about the appearance of the UFC.
Correct.
Awesome. What did I say to you the other day? Like when I you know,
the first time you met, not even the first time, probably a week into my training, I think you saw the progression I was already making. You saw the passion I had, and you looked me dead in the eyes and you go, if you actually want any shot in this industry, you're going to quit now and be done with it if you really want it. I believe that was about 4 weeks ago. I haven't smoked pot since that conversation.
Yep.
And trust me, in the back of my mind, I was like, well, Christmas is coming.
Yeah. You got to be hanging out with some friends.
Like,
and there's cookies.
And New Year's, you know, my things, you know. But I didn't do it. I was like, I want this.
Yeah.
Just like I wanted to be a fighter in the UFC at a time because I knew I could make great money doing it, even though I wasn't happy cutting all the weight and suffering.
Oh, yeah.
I made sacrifices. For this, I'm making sacrifice, but I'm happy.
Yeah.
It's what I want.
Yeah, I can tell. I can tell you love it. And like I said, like when you first came in, you were like super fan.
Oh, yeah.
But like that's when I tried to like dial down. You're like, I want to do this and I want to do that. I'm like, you'll learn that that's not really important and this is important. And I think now you're starting to get like, I remember you doing an interview with Melton. And you're like, I really want that holy shit moment. And I was like, well, that's fine that you say that, but you'll see that that's not really worth it. And you're like, yeah, but I want to do hardcore and I want to do this. And I was like, yeah, you'll see that that's, yeah, but that's what Ambrose does and all those guys. Like, yeah, I know, but then you want to have a career, not just a couple years. You want to have a long. So, I mean, I could see you're starting to learn.
And one thing I've noticed, if you're actually good at wrestling, you don't need to touch a table. You don't need to touch a chair. You can make a crowd pop just by walking out and doing the right things in the ring.
The most electrifying move in sports entertainment is just doing this and dropping, you know, for lack of a better term, a piss poor elbow that usually hits someone in their belly button or something like that. But
he makes it look good.
It gets the biggest reaction you'll ever hear. The greatest leg drop ever is Hulk Hogan's. You know, it's not the one off the top rope. It is what it is. So what kind of backlash did you get? I mean, because I saw your Twitter feed blow up, and that's when I texted you, and I was just like, no, sell it, and just we'll hold off on the podcast. And because, like I said, people think, because I also saw a great tweet that you sent out.
Bob Saget
one? No, not that one. But, yeah, that too. But it was the one where whenever you mention the UFC name, there's a robot for UFC schedule pops up. And it was like, hey, Matthew Riddle, you ready for the UFC?
I guess
so. And you were like, basically like, fuck you. And something about like Dana White, he should worry about his fighters not getting a car collection or something like that.
Yeah, I guess I'm still on the UFC. Let's tag Riddle so we get more.
No, it's not that. It's a robot. If you look at it in their bio, it's a robot. Whenever you mention anything UFC, it'll automatically generate a tweet to you. That'll say, because I get it all the time, it'll say, hey, Dan, or the Danny Cage, are you ready for UFC 152 or 162 or whatever? And I'm like, what the hell is this? But yeah, it automatically generates.
Yeah, I was a little bitter about that. I think I tagged somebody with UFC, and then I got, hey, be sure to tune in. You know, and I was like, shut the piss off. Maybe Dana should take care of his car collection.
Oh, that was great. So what are some of the people, like, have you been approached, like, for interviews and all this other stuff?
I've been approached for at least probably 50 interviews, and not just in America, Asia, Russia, the UK, Ireland, a lot of people, Brazil, people that watch mixed martial arts, they're extremely upset. They're extremely upset with the UFC's poor performance, and not with the poor cards they're putting on,
right,
but with how they're treating fighters and they're hypocrites. You know,
right.
To fire and penalize somebody for medical marijuana who has a medical license, but then to treat your world champion differently for cocaine.
Right, and that blows my mind right there, because then it just basically says this is all about money. And
it always has been,
yeah,
with them.
And I say, I don't do this for money. I do it because I love it and the passion. I believe if you keep doing the right thing, eventually the money will find you and the right people will be around you. And like I said, you know, I'm not paying anybody or bringing anybody in. And then people are just showing up and wanting to be around and helping out because they want to give back to the business. It blows my mind that, like, this whole, like, them letting this happen, and people in there, if you notice, I don't hear any of the fighters saying anything.
Well, no, the fighters won't say anything because they're afraid to lose their jobs.
Right.
Because they will lose their jobs if they say anything about it. The fighters in the UFC, the only thing they're going to say is, I hope John Jones gets the help he needs, and he's the greatest champion in the world. And the
which is a dog and pony show,
yeah.
Because...
And I did it for years, too. You know, I did it for years until they put me on blast for my first drug test. And I was like, well, if you put me on blast, I'm just going to be honest.
Right back.
And once I was honest, trust me, this my stock rise, because people know what's real.
Right.
They know when you're just being told what to say and you're being a puppet, and they know when you're being you and you're there behind the scenes and you can tell the truth.
Like, were you close at all with Joe Rogan? You talked to him at all?
You know, the closest me and Joe Rogan were in the ring, and I would usually say, oh, I love you, Joe Rogan, after a win and stuff like that, because, you know, I'm that kind of guy. But, you know, I'll be honest, just a tidbit, when I was in England, I mean, I've hung out with Eddie Bravo, who's good friends with Joe Rogan, jiu-jitsu specialist and stuff. And I was at the legalized marijuana party at the Playboy Mansion, and we were more than friendly and partaking in the delights. And we were in England after I lost my first fight. And him and Joe Rogan, I could tell, were up to something. I was like, hey, guys, can I, you know?
Can I?
They blew me up, acted like they didn't know me, and walked away.
Really?
And yeah, but that's how people like Joe Rogan are.
Wait, was this after you got fired?
No. This was my fourth fight in the UFC. Right now was 3-1. I lost my first fight in England in Manchester. And that's when they blew me off, and I was like, oh, so I see how it is, you know.
Right.
It's like, we're not buds, you're just a man on the mic, and you really don't care about anybody but yourself.
Okay, because I find it odd, because, like, I don't know Joe Rogan, never met him. I saw something he said about pro wrestling before blasting it and something or another. But it's so odd that, like, now UFC is coming out and calling themselves sports entertainment to get around that, so they can get bookings in New York. So, again, it's all about the money, which was the same thing with Vince. Vince did it to escape the athletic commission so then he could book more. He could do WrestleMania again in New Jersey, get around the state athletic commission. That's for another subject. But Joe always labels himself like a freedom fighter and always speaks about, like, the tyranny of government and this and stuff and that. And then, like, I haven't heard him say anything about it. And I actually tweeted him saying I wish I knew his point of view on the subject. And he actually just retweeted a statement on it by somebody else who said it was out of competition. But that doesn't mean it's fair. That's almost like government doing something really horrible and Joe Rogan going, like, well, you know what? They went by the guidelines and that is the law, instead of being like, this is tyranny, this is complete. But it seems like if you work for that corporation, you just keep your mouth shut.
Joe Rogan's a puppet.
Right.
He can act, he can smoke his DMT and film it, he can have his TV shows, he can act like he's a rebel, but he's a puppet collecting a check. And that's a fact.
Yeah.
You are.
The corporations run everything, and that's it's a big machine, and we see that more and more and that's just the way it's always going to be. But I just, you know, that I don't know how you can go by that, wear that flag of freedom and you know, that you're this and you're that, and then just be like, these are the rules. Yeah, yeah.
That's all.
But you can't, you can't say it's about freedom. You should just say it's all about this.
Well, that would be him being honest, and I would, that would be really relieving to hear, but he won't do that. He wants to keep his job. He wants to get his TV shows.
Right.
You know, he's going to do what he's doing. He's not a stupid man.
No.
You know?
Yeah, so what do you take from all this? Do you think that this is going to, like, for, so let's get back, just to draw back, we never corrected this. You were upset about the testosterone replacement treatment and the whole medical marijuana. Like, what has changed since then?
Since I got fired, I think it was a month, not even a month, right after I got fired, they upped the percentage of marijuana. It was 15 nanograms. They upped it by, you know, 100%. Now it's 150 nanograms you have to test for you to get a failed drug.
So you probably wouldn't have got popped?
I wouldn't have popped. There's no way I would have popped. There's no. It just wouldn't have happened. And now TRT is now banned. And Chael Sonnen's been the victim of that, unfortunately, because he got the green light. Go ahead, bro. Use the TRT. You got the doctors know you're good. And now they're like, stop. You can't do it. You still got to fight, though. But you can't use the medicine your doctor prescribed you. And, you know, like, if you were prescribed steroids and started using them, then you're like, no, you can't now. It's like, wait.
Wait, now it's just going to shut my – I'm going to drop off.
And guys like Dan Henderson, Chael Sonnen, if you ask them, they're like, dude, I stopped. I literally have a cold all the time. I literally can't fight the – anything anymore,
right.
You know, they feel 100 times weaker because it was a performance enhancing drug, you know,
because that's what I laughed about when Joe Rogan said marijuana is a performance enhancing drug, which is like,
and I agree with him, it is a performance enhancing drug in an eating contest. if your job is to get yelled at without getting mad
or creative,
you're an artist. I do believe marijuana could help you in those situations. I do not think marijuana makes you a better cage fighter,
because I think, like, I do some of my best thinking, I don't smoke pot, but like, if I'm feeling wound up and I need to focus, what I'll do is I'll grab like a good book and I'll just drink some Irish whiskey or a couple beers, and then you know you start to go. You need to draw
the
that mind.
Creative juices.
Yeah, you got to get that creative juices going. God, that is just it blows my mind. Like, just watching the world, like all these people defending it, and then saying like, well, it's because you were a mid-carder.
Yeah.
Like, what does that have to do with anything?
This is the part that, like, the only part that offends me, because most of the people are really on my side. Most of the comments I get and most of the people I talk to are like, dude, I can't believe how much, you know, I can't believe they did that. You know, that's outrageous. You know, but the people, you know, that don't agree with me, it's just ridiculous. They're like, oh, you weren't a needle mover. You weren't selling millions of dollars. I was like, dude, I was on a 4-fight win streak.
But even then,
I just got ranked in the top 15.
But
maybe if you didn't fire me right away, right now, I know where I'd be, because I trained with the world's best in Vegas. I know where I'd be.
But even if you, let's say you were a mid-carder or you were the absolute shits, it doesn't matter. You shouldn't have two sets of rules, because, like, does that mean you'd be okay if Brett Favre, you know, I'm aging myself, he hasn't played in years. But let's just say Peyton Manning, you know, gets popped for steroids and they let him go, and then the third string quarterback gets popped and they fire him, and they go, well, you know, Peyton's the number one quarterback. Well, you should just let him do his own rules.
And that's exactly what the UFC
did. Yeah, they just did.
And they can use their excuse, oh, it was an out-of-play drug test. Okay.
He got busted doing something illegal.
I guarantee you, if I would have failed an out-of-fight drug test before the fight, do you think they would have let me fight in that?
Hell no.
And they would have said, it's for the safety of our fighters.
Yes.
Well, I think light heavyweight, you know, I don't know how he consumed the cocaine, but using cocaine, I think that's extremely unsafe, especially 3 weeks before the fight. It's an extremely dangerous stimulant, and there's a reason why.
You don't,
you know, there's not 8 states that already legalized it and 20 others that's it's legal medically.
Yes. Yeah. I don't see anybody getting prescribed the medical cocaine. So where do we go from here? What do you think is the fallout of this whole, the whole hypocrisy? You think it gets swept under rug? You think the machine of the UFC just eats it up and spits it out and spins it?
They're going to try their best. You know, I think eventually they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to address the problem. I think what will probably happen is maybe they strip Jones of his title. Maybe they fine him $50,000. You know, and personally, me, I feel bad for the guy, but he did mess up.
Right.
You know, and I don't think it's fair that I messed up with a medical license and got severe punishment and then put on blast.
Right.
He fails an out-of-fight drug test 3 weeks before a title fight and then gets a pat on the back for winning the fight and going to rehab.
Now, right now, if Dana White called you and said, come on back, what would you say?
I would say no. I would laugh pretty hard for probably a minute 30, and then I would say, no, you got to be kidding me. You're a joke. And I think he knows that. I think a lot of people know that. And that's the thing. There's a lot of fighters. There's a lot of fight fans that are refusing to even watch the UFC anymore because of this incident and because of incidents with me and other fighters that have been given the boot for these kind of things just because you weren't a needle mover.
Yeah, I haven't watched the UFC. You know, I watch it here and there. I was a big fan of the Ultimate Fighter show. I remember your season. But that's how, you know, me and my wife really, like, I got my wife to cross over to start watching UFC was because she got to know the guys and see, like, you know, that wasn't just barbaric beating the hell out of each other. There was actually technique to it, different styles and stuff like that. But I think, like, they turned into the machine too quick, where when it first started off, it was very organic and it was more of a family, and then it just turned into the huge machine. Do you get that feeling?
I get that feeling. And the one thing it is, when they first start off, and it's the one thing I love about professional wrestling, when it first started off, they weren't building the UFC. They were building their fighters. They were building the stars. So you would want to watch the UFC, which in turn, and that's why the Ultimate Fighter started.
Right.
You're getting to know us.
So now you're invested. Yeah.
Now you're invested. Now we're stars to you because you've seen us on TV. You've seen us work. And that's the best part about professional wrestling. They're not building WWE. WWE is going to be there. TNA, they're going to be there. But they build their stars because if your stars are this big, your company's going to be that big.
Right.
What the UFC did in like the last probably 3 years, 4 years, instead of building stars, building fighters, they tried to build themselves. They tried to go from just one country or Canada or South America. Now they're in Australia. Now they're in England. Now they're in Asia. They wanted to get a global market. And in a way, it might work for them. I guarantee Dana White's pocket and his bank account is fat, and so are the Fertittas. But at the same time, your fighters got punished. You literally... Look, what kind of stars are in the UFC right now? Like, I can name John Jones.
Right. And then not only that, where else can you
maybe
go?
Pettis?
Where else can you go? You got Bellator. And, I mean, what was there before? There was Strikeforce. That's gone, right?
The UFC bought that out. There was Pride FC in Japan. They bought that out. Because, to be honest, when I first started fighting, you know, my goal wasn't to fight in the UFC. My goal was to fight in Pride because I wanted to go in Japan. The crowd's more respectful.
And was it in a cage then?
No, it was in ropes.
It was in a ring in Pride,
a cage in the UFC, and there was also different rules.
Right.
You couldn't elbow in Pride, so you were less likely to get cut, but you could stomp somebody's head, so you were more likely to get knocked out.
Yeah.
So I personally like those rules because I want to finish fights. I don't want to just cut somebody and make them look ugly.
Right. You know? And you're a pretty boy.
Yeah,
right?
I'm trying. I mean, I don't know how pretty I am anymore.
You're rocking that mullet, man. You're going for that HBK throwback.
I'm trying, baby.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems like they turned into that big machine, and it's just overtaken them. And how much Dana White owns, what, 6%, I think it is, or less than 10%? And like he's the face of them, and you know, he comes off sometimes very abrasive, but so do I. So I kind of respect his mentality, and I like the way how he is outspoken and angry and stuff.
I think to be a good face for a sport like mixed martial arts, and also just to be a good businessman, you have to be aggressive like that. I think he oversteps that aggressiveness regularly, though. Like, why? If I wasn't such a big deal, why are you going Fox Sports?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I didn't understand
because
that.
Because I am a big deal.
Yeah, and he came off bitter.
Yes, it was.
Right, like I always say to everybody, like, who always dwells on, like, an old girlfriend, and I go, you still like her? Well, no, I don't. I go, then you wouldn't be talking about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Like, you know.
How often do you hear me in here talking about the UFC?
Not at all.
Because I don't care. I didn't even watch the Jones fight. I saw it on ESPN. I saw the replay.
Yeah, and even like when we were in the bar after the wrestling show, you just laughed at UFC. Like, UFC, you're like,
yeah. I was like, you see that? He called that shot. You know? But, yeah, you know, I really lost all interest. And not when I got fired, when I was working for him. If you ask my brother, the last year or so when I was fighting, I only wanted to fight about three more times. I wanted to make enough money to pay off my house and put some money away for my kids, and then I was like, after that, why would I keep fighting?
Right.
I made my money, I made my nut.
What was your motivation? Sorry to cut you off. What was your motivation then to get into pro wrestling?
Pro wrestling is something I've wanted to do my entire life. It's the only reason why I even started fighting. And the only reason I really didn't make that drive for it is because, one, I didn't know where to start. There was MMA gyms popping up everywhere. I wrestled in college, you know. It's a lot easier to strap on bag gloves in your college wrestling room and scrap with your college teammates than it is to find a professional wrestling school,
right,
learn the trade, learn how to work with people. Because what people don't know, if you've never trained professional wrestling, you don't understand that. No, not anybody can pick it up.
No.
You have to be special. You have to, and it's not just athleticism.
And you see it here, because you'll have guys here that have been here 6 months and they're not doing what you do or what Clutch does. And there's people that have been here like 2 years and are not doing what you or Clutch does or what Nick does or Damiana does. It's not just, you know, having repetition. You have to have that certain.
Charisma. And that's the one thing, even when I fought, I got fight of the night multiple times. You don't get that because, oh, you're just such a good technical fighter. No, I'm a crowd pleaser. I like to go out there and
balls to the walls.
Balls to the wall. I would pick the matches where I'd go balls to the wall. Like if Dana said $100,000 bonus, I went balls to the wall. $80,000, balls to the wall. If I'm fighting a dude who's like usually fighting 55, but he bumped up to fight me, balls to the wall because he probably can't knock my chin off.
Right.
You know, I picked those fights smart, and it paid off. And the crowd loved me for it.
Right. And I think the world of wrestling is going to love you. Just like I said, just stay focused. Keep doing what you're doing. You know, I've had to get in your ear a couple times.
Yep.
And what's good is, like, your wife is very supportive, and she helps out, and she's training here, actually.
Probably the most supportive wife you'll ever see,
yeah,
about pro wrestling.
Yeah. So. Right. And, you know, and it's a lifestyle, and it's good that, you know, you're able to do what you love. I just think sky's the limit with you. It's just a matter of not, you know, putting the cart before the basket. You know, there's still a long way to go. And even when you get to NXT, if you get there, or if you get the Ring of Honor,
just started.
It's just the start, and then, you know,
a tryout. You just started. Anything. Even a phone call, the fight just started.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I've been doing it for a couple months now. The fight hasn't even started.
Right.
I'm still grinding just to get a shot.
And it's, you know, it's a blast watching you guys in here. And we got a great group of guys. We got like 20-some students. And, you know, I was just talking to the other guys. And I think I'm going to invest in another ring and talk to Paul about being able to.
That'd be sick.
And having another ring up here. And if we have to, keep it in the truck. And we just set it up every time before training. And that's just the way it is. And we train till 2 in the morning. Who gives a shit? Any closing thoughts that you'd like to say about, you know, what you think should happen to the UFC? Or do you not even care?
To be honest, you know, I have nothing negative to say. You know, unfortunately,
wait a minute, you just said a bunch of negative
stuff.
No.
I have nothing more negative to say.
Or are you saying you don't really, or are you just saying that you were stating the facts, you're not going to, you know,
no,
bury them.
I'm not going to bury them. They're burying themselves.
Right.
And on top of that, you know, the only people I feel for right now are the fighters.
Because
they're the ones that suffer. Trust me, I worked so hard to get to where I was in the UFC. I fought my first pro fight in the UFC, and for somebody to say that, nobody gets to say
that. Except CM Punk.
Yeah. You know, and CM Punk.
Yeah, come on. You don't have any ill will toward him. I mean,
no, I do not, and I wish him all the best. I hope he does extremely well. I hope they get him an amateur fighter off the streets, and he knocks his head off. I hope he hits the GTS in the ring. And honestly, I loved watching CM Punk wrestle. I thought he was a great in-ring performer.
Yeah.
He can work a mic like none other. And, you know, I wish him all the best. I, you know... I'm not going to get into it. MMA is extremely difficult, and it's not working with somebody. You're working against somebody 24/7 in a steel cage.
But I mean, like, you know, like that's what, you know, but some people crave that. Like, when Brock Lesnar walked away, you know, he went and tried the NFL just because he never even really played really before, but he just wanted to go try competition, and then he wound up going to the UFC. And I mean, like, I think, like, a healthy Brock Lesnar is just unstoppable. He's just he's a beast. He's got amateur background. And they can say what he wants about the striking, but if you get hit by once by him, I mean, that's like getting hit by the Hulk.
That's all it takes. And someone with in the heavyweight division, somebody like Brock Lesnar is the scariest guy you could run.
Yeah, because he's not the big goofball.
Yeah, exactly.
He wrestles like a light heavyweight. He's fast. He's agile.
Fast. He's mean, and he doesn't know when to stop.
Yeah.
You know, he's definitely an intimidating force, and I've seen him in person a couple of times. Never got to trade words or anything, but he's... He's a spectacle.
Yeah,
you know, he's a specimen indeed.
I'm just gonna make sure someone's not texting me. No, it's my wife. Just let me know that the kids fell asleep for at 8 o'clock when they were supposed to.
Nice.
The alarm is set. Have a good night, Dan. That's the kind of wife I love. She doesn't even care when I get home. Just she knows I'm down to business.
That's nice, wife. I mean, I just put my phone on mute.
So, mine is on mute. It's just damn.
When I open it up, I will probably have a laundry list of messages. But I love her. She's great. So.
Yeah, she is awesome. So you don't have anything bad to say. I mean, you just, you know, you feel for the fighters. And, I mean, I'm just curious how this is going to blow up in the face of the machine or if it's just going to get swallowed up and spit out and spun.
I, unfortunately, from my experience with the UFC... They do what they want, unfortunately. They're going to swallow this up. Jones is going to get the help, which I'm glad he is. But at the same time, other fighters are going to have to suffer. If you're not the main event, if you're not starting fights at press conferences, if you're not that guy, you're expendable in their eyes.
All right, well, we'll leave it at that. And so like you said, we'll just got you on record. If Dana White called right now and wanted you back, you would say no and laugh at his face for a minute and a half.
Indeed.
And what if you got the call right now to go to an NXT tryout?
I would drop everything. I'd tell my wife, good luck, take care of these kids. I'm moving to Florida. And I love you. I'll send part of the check. If I even get a check, because I don't even care as long as I get a shot.
Awesome. All right, everybody. That was Matthew Riddle, former UFC fighter, current Monster Factory student. I am Danny Cage. What is your Twitter handle?
Riddle Tough 7, but I should probably change
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you should change it.
I should change that.
You should change that.
Hopefully I can change it to Riddle NXT.
Yeah, maybe 15. In the future. But right now you can just do like me because I used to be crap for face. I just changed it to the Danny Cage. So follow me on Twitter and follow us at @4 Monster Factory. That was Monster Factory Radio. Hope we answered some questions for you. If you have any comments, hit us up. Hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Like I said, you know, he's not bitter. He just wanted to educate some people. Hopefully this answered some questions, shed some light on some things, and just shows you the pure hypocrisy of the whole situation. We are out of here. Goodbye. Say goodbye, Matthew.
Take care, guys.